So yeah, we have Ashley today.
Yay.
Scooped her out of her desk. I was like, how long do I have you for? And she said, well,
now
only so long.
Now 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
Yeah. But, and she's going to pop out, but it's kind of like, you know, we have a guest come in.
Yeah.
And then we just continue the conversation when they got to bounce.
I like it. This is what we normally do anyway. We're just, you know, we get in and out. Yeah. Let's do it.
I like it. So all right. Everybody else better be on watch.
Yeah.
They never know when they're going to be pulled in. So the reason I pulled Ashley in today for her first Beyond the Dill episode. Yeah. I was asking Ben, I was like, I want to talk about why people don't show up. And specifically, I've seen it since I've been working in this office and with Ben for 18 months now. You know, I've been to masterminds. I've been to all kinds of networking events. And it's just such a struggle to get agents, real estate agents, to show up to things. And they'll RSVP, and they'll say, I'm coming, and then the morning of, there's just like crickets or, hey, I can't make it. And I do think there's two sides to the argument. There's like real estate is always changing, and your day is always changing, and things come up that you do have to address because you're dealing with sometimes multi-million dollar transactions, and it needs your attention. But I do think that's less rare than I'm just not going to make it because I'm going to go to spin instead, or I just don't feel like it, or
I just forgot.
I forgot, or I'm too nervous. Like, there's all kinds of reasons. And I think that's more common than there being an emergency with a deal. And I know, so I talked to Ben about this a little bit yesterday. We just kind of tossed around ideas, and I know he has a theory. So I do want to hear that. Like, your initial theory was, and I agree with it, and I have my own thoughts on why people don't show up to things and why people hesitate to put themselves out there. And then you have yours. But Ben's is, you think people don't like being uncomfortable.
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons that people don't show up. I think it starts with real estate agents just in general have a very poor connection with their schedule. So they let the business dictate their schedule rather than their schedule dictate their business. So you see most real estate agents, because again, and it's difficult. Like, I don't mean to imply that I've had it all down pat my entire career.
Can I ask you a question? What were you like in the beginning?
I was very schedule regimented.
You've always been that way.
Yeah.
Okay, good to know.
But because I had proximity to people who demanded, like, I've always had a real estate coach. When I first got into real estate, I had a real estate coach. The real estate coach said, hey, let's look at your schedule and let's have your schedule dictate what you're doing. So there's an appropriate time for you to do things. And I also wouldn't sort of participate in things that I didn't find of value. And I think there's, in general, real estate agents, because they sort of don't have the advice or guidance, they don't set up the schedule the way that they should. I think a lot of the times what happens is agents will go from, like, follow a shiny red object wherever it goes, right? Oh, like, this is the new thing. Let's go find out about this. And then I got to do this. Oh, I should go networking. Or they do things that make them feel like they're busy to give themselves the feeling that they're not just sitting around and doing nothing. Mm-hmm. So they'll schedule a lot of, like, lunches with mortgage brokers and attorneys, and like they'll go to networking events where they never have any real estate conversations, but they feel like they're doing active business. And so they waste a lot of their time, and then they let the one or two or three deals that they've got going on, they let that completely dictate. So, like, if an agent is working with one or two buyers and that buyer wants to have a conversation at a specific time, they don't say, hey, listen, I'll be tied up for 2 hours at an event, or just at an appointment, and I'll call you afterwards. It's like, oh yeah, I can deal with it now. And it's out of a desperation because they're worried about that business going away. Mm-hmm. It's not just like one thing, but I think it has a lot to do with, you know, at start, they are very poor allocators of their time. They don't commit and stick to a schedule, because the vast majority of real estate agents don't do a whole lot of business, and that's what they see out there consistently. So I think it starts with that. But before I talk too much about, you know, what I see out there, in your experience, Ashley, what is, like, when you look at, have you always sort of participated in mastermind groups and learning sessions and that sort of thing, or have you always just kind of done it on your own?
So I think the first couple years that I was in real estate, the brokerage that I was with, it was very regimented. Tuesday, Thursdays, there was morning calls. The same thing happens. It was like low attendance. It was the people that were not necessarily producing that weren't on the calls. So there was like a direct correlation between like your your production and your activity on those calls, but I was filling my schedule with exactly what you just talked about, like networking events, lunches with people that it wasn't necessarily turning over any business. It was just filling my schedule.
Making you feel like you were sort of involved in the business, but in fact, it just wasn't. Like these Tuesday and Thursday meetings, like what would the broker or the person presenting, like what would they go over? Like what was the value for participating in these meetings?
Yeah. So like one of the calls was what they called a round table. So, you know, the whole brokerage would jump on a call and present any questions or things that came up during the week, and the entire brokerage would talk about it. And, you know, the idea was so that everyone could learn from whatever that agent was bringing to the table. So it was an open discussion and it was an hour. And then on Thursdays, there was more of a presented, like, this is the topic. This is what we're doing. The broker was talking, or someone from outside the brokerage was talking, and your camera was supposed to be on. You were supposed to be present, and hopefully you learned something.
Yeah. So did you regularly attend those?
Yeah. Every Tuesday and Thursday. To me, I mean, I'm super type A. Obviously, I put it in my calendar. I do it.
Yeah.
But a lot of people had trouble time blocking. Like if it's not on your schedule, of course, you're going to forget what you have going on at 9 o'clock on Tuesday.
Okay. So I'm fascinated with these events that they did. What percentage of the brokerage do you think showed up?
A quarter.
Okay. And how many people was that?
Like 12, maybe.
12 people would show up.
Okay. And it's the same 12 people every single week.
And was it a valuable discussion for you to be involved in?
Towards the end, no, I just put my camera on and did something else. At the beginning, when I was new to the industry, yeah, I was picking up a lot because a lot of, you know, producing agents were talking about things that were going on that I had never had exposure to.
Yep.
But it was just repeating the conversation over and over and over and over again. Yeah. So I eventually just had my camera on, but was working in the background.
So first of all, I want to commend the brokerage for even doing that, because that's exceptionally rare within a brokerage, even to collaborate on a small level like that. And it can really help sort of coach and guide some agents. You know, one of the things that I know too is that, you know, I understand the idea of like camera on and participate.
Yeah.
But there's going to be a lot of situations, especially because of the line of work that we're in, that you can't do that, but you want to still be able to consume the information.
Yeah.
So I think to a certain extent, you limit the potential of who can participate, even if participation is limited to sort of consuming the information versus, you know, sort of an active participation. So, I mean, I think that that's amazing. And getting even 12 people to show up routinely out of, let's call it 50 or 60 agents, that's still exceptionally good. Like that's better than average.
Yeah.
So I think that that's great. You've had some experience since with sort of trying to attract some agents to participate in events here at the office that we provide, and also agents that have partnered with us to participate, not only in the value that we provide, but also the value that our upline, Aaron and Jose and Lars, all of the content and the masterminds and the coaching sessions that they provide. And very rarely do we get people to participate.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's, you kind of hit the nail on the head. I don't think that they've been exposed to having that regimented schedule, or it like wasn't important to them. They're not seeing like that direct result from having a consistent schedule. And I think they're intimidated by coming into a room of agents that either they don't know or they do know, and they may see them as a higher producer than them. But I think time blocking is something that a lot of agents struggle with. They just, they're chasing.
Two things. So it's time blocking and schedule, and then sort of the intimidation factor about participating in something because it exposes you to either what you haven't done in the past or what you're not doing currently.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a big part of what I talked to Lauren about yesterday with regards to one of the biggest reasons that people have a hard time participating is because it sort of shines a spotlight on the things they're not doing.
Right.
If they get on a call and they hear about all these people making moves and sort of working hard and all that kind of stuff, just sort of subconsciously, it gives you a lot of pain because it amplifies, you know, what you're not doing.
Right. I think to that too, like not understanding that there's so much, you can gain so much growth from being uncomfortable. Like I don't think people see that it's a gain and that they can grow from it. I think it's they're uncomfortable because it's exposing like a flaw or like a fail for them.
Yeah. Do you think that real estate agents, part of what they think they should be doing as real estate agents is learning? Or do you think that they believe that they just have to work?
Work, But I also think they have a hard time with this concept of like collaborating. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like keeping things is secret, like yep. is important, or is something that they think you need to do. And there is no value to them, or they don't haven't seen the value of collaborating. So to come into one of these masterminds and collaborate when they have been taught to keep things to themselves in secret is hard.
So I think that there's probably two things that come up for me. Number one is that I understand why they feel like there's very little value in collaboration, because most the real estate industry in general for years and years, and certainly in my, you know, mother's generation and early on in my career, a lot of real estate agents thought that if you gave away the magic sauce that made you successful, that they would be building up their competition. It was very much a limited opportunity that was out there.
Right.
And if you made somebody better, that would sort of hurt your chances of success.
Right.
What I think is interesting is that when early on in my career, I had to go to other areas of the country in order for me to get sort of the collaboration that I found value in. Right. Because most people, if they show up to these events that the brokerage has put on, it's very general information. Mm-hmm. Like, and it might be good for newer agents just to get a lay of the land, but it's very rare that you're going to walk in and you're going to have like a lot of value that's actually going to be tangible and usable. Yeah. So I think that's probably one of those things that happens. And then you talk about the fear of, you know, and the intimidation factor.
Yeah.
Part of that too, I think, is that if you do have somebody that starts to participate and then they don't take action.
Right.
I think what it almost, again, subconsciously, it creates this behavior pattern where they're going to go learn, they're going to be uncomfortable, and then they don't act. And then they sort of feel worse about themselves over the coming weeks, because either they see other agents actually taking action and doing something, mm-hmm. or they just ignore the whole thing. And then they go, well, I think it's subconscious, where they just say, I'm not going to implement anything that I learn anyway. So why am I going and putting myself in an uncomfortable situation?
Exactly.
I would argue that the more you're in that uncomfortable situation, the more your natural instincts will want to take action to make you more comfortable.
Right.
But people have a really hard time being uncomfortable.
Yeah. And I also feel like it's an industry where like ego is a big thing. Mm-hmm. And some of the people that I've invited to the masterminds, like where the brokerage that they're at, like they're really built up, and you know, they don't want to come into a situation where they are not the shining star, or they're not, their ego just kind of gets in the way.
What was different about your mindset? Like, why did you sort of, as soon as we started talking, mm-hmm. you were like, I'm in, like, just, I'm an open book. Tell me, guide me, coach me, let me learn from you. Like, what do you think the difference is between you and sort of the average agent?
I don't like being complacent or being comfortable in what I'm doing. Some agents are totally fine doing like their 10, 15 deals a year. That's great for them. I'm a really competitive person with myself.
Yeah.
And when I feel myself getting complacent or comfortable, like I know I need to change. Like I know I need to like either...
You're a rare bird.
I'm like super type A, like just super competitive within myself. But not everyone has that. And sometimes it's a flaw. Like I just can't, I don't like failing. So I knew, like I had just had my second kid. I knew before going into that I was in a rut, and where I was not going to help me get out. I didn't have proximity. No one was pushing me. And they were like, oh, look, she's doing great. She's young. She's a top producer. And I didn't want to be that. I wanted to be a lower fruit on the totem pole so that you could push me to continue growing. I don't like being at the top.
That was true for me back in the day too, is that, you know, doing 25 or 30 transactions at a RE/MAX office with the exception of one or two agents. And I was very fortunate that I had Gil Campos in my office, who was doing 70, 80, 90 deals between him and his team, where that was always sort of, that allowed me to push. But you said something earlier that was interesting to me, that you're competitive with yourself. Mm-hmm. Do you ever feel like you're competitive with other people?
I can be, but I've found like in my past that like it's within me. I could be competitive with someone else if it was like an accountability situation, but it's more so an internal. I just like need to keep pushing.
Yeah. And you strike me as a person that like, you root for other people to do better because inherently I think you understand that the better everyone is around you,
right,
the more it's going to push you to be better, which is a really rare quality, because most people want to be better than others, but they want others to do less than them just so that they can be better. They don't want to use it as motivation and fuel to do better and grow and, you know, accomplish more, but they just want to be first to be first.
Yeah. For me, I would rather everyone be doing amazing, and it continues to light a fire within me. And when I don't have that fire, then it's just like, I don't like doing the day to day and just be like, oh yeah.
I do have a follow-up question. Before you have to sign off, I have like a very specific question about your week and how you time block. Okay. I think people would find that interesting.
Especially since we know that Connor doesn't really do anything to support or help you at all. So, you know, you're shout a single mother and, you know, there is no husband around at all. Connor never does anything,
he
ever.
He made the episode. Yeah. I don't know if he's going to be happy.
Connor,
about
what
that.
Up, brother?
No, I think to the average person, like, our family schedule is so, like, just a mess. But to us, it makes sense.
But what does a day look like or a week look like for Ashley?
So my husband is a police officer, and his rotation is four days on, 4 days off. So like four of those days, like he is super supportive and like is with the kids. So like typically it's like a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I have the mornings until 12 o'clock and then I have to go pick up my son. And then I kind of try and do like phone calls or things that I can multitask in the afternoon. Once we put them to bed, I get right on the computer and I kind of do some of like that. You know, work that no one likes to do, or like the book work, the contracts, the emails, catching up on emails, or I'll do like phone calls. I'll connect at like 7 o'clock with buyers or sellers that want to have conversations
at night.
Yeah. I don't really shut off. I kind of just go, and my middle of the afternoon is when I kind of refocus on the kids. So like 12 to 2 or 3 is kind of my time that they're eating lunch, doing nap time. I'm connecting with them. I'm doing their stuff.
It almost works really well because you've got that break sort of in that middle of the day where you can sort of connect with your family and take a minute away from real estate. Yeah. Not that I'm sure you take calls during that time too, but like it is sort of pulling away. When you were saying that, I was like, get to 7 o'clock at night and I can't do anything voluntarily. Like if I'm negotiating a contract, I can be on and I can do that. But you will never, and this has been my entire career, you will never find me doing like busy work or shit at night because I am spent.
But you work right through the
day. But I go through right through the day. Right. So that really makes sense.
I'm more like you.
Yeah.
As a mom, I need to break it up.
Right.
So did you always know that that was sort of like, did you program in that time blocking where you knew you're going to work at night, or was it created out of necessity?
It rotates around my husband's schedule. So like right now he works a midnight shift. He needs to sleep. And so he'll sleep from 12 in the afternoon until like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. And when he gets up, I can kind of tap back out and do my work. If his schedule changes, if it's a three to one shift, he has to go to work at 2. So like I have to take the kids and like from 2 to 5, I'm mom.
Yep.
I don't have any help until 5 o'clock when like my parents or someone, a babysitter is around.
Yeah.
So it just kind of has fallen that way, but we just stay very fluid and flexible. I just know that the morning time is my time. So if something in the office or like something physical needs my attention, I know I have to do it before 12.
What I think I hear is that like everybody's going to have their individual necessities of what has to get done on a daily basis, right? And I think you have to look at your priorities and where you're spending your time.
Right.
So, you know, there has to be a certain amount of time that you're spending on yourself and your well-being. There's a certain amount of time that you have to be a parent and a spouse and a supportive of your partner, right? And that was a lot like when my kids were, you know, when my wife was pregnant and my kids were really young, like I would get up and out and I literally wouldn't see the kids until like the evening. And so there was weeks that would go by and Colleen would get to a breaking point where she'd be like, you need to be home at night a little bit more because I need a break.
Yeah.
And so we all have these things that we have to do, these commitments that we either make to ourselves or our families or our spouse or whatever it might be. But we have to really look at the time that we have and then maximize the time that we do have to work. If you're intentional about sort of making a commitment to those other things, you have to be intentional about the commitment that you're making to work and take advantage of the time that you have and be efficient.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I just want to go back because I know you've got probably like a minute or two.
Yeah, sure, a minute or two.
Okay. So
don't mess up her time.
I just wanted to, when you talked about being type A and being competitive with yourself and striving and always looking to put yourself in proximity.
Yeah.
Do you think you could do what you do now on your own?
On my own?
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to, but could I? It would be a slower progression.
Yeah.
I like to be surrounded by people. I think proximity is power. I don't think anyone should want to do it by themselves.
And I think that that's because what comes up for me when you say that is that because you're type A and because you are correctly competing against yourself versus external, which I think is a massive win. That was not my experience when I was always competing against somebody else. But what comes up for me is that you can achieve outsized results just by virtue of those two things, being type A and always wanting to win and competing against yourself. But I think you still understood that if you're in collaboration and you're in proximity to other people that are doing massive things, it just makes it exponentially easier.
Yeah.
So consider this, those folks that are out there that are not type A, that are competitive with other people because of insecurities or fear of failure and that sort of thing. I think if it's necessary and it is beneficial to a person that doesn't necessarily need it in order to succeed, imagine if you're not that type, how much you need it.
Right.
You need to be around people that are producing outside results and questioning the status quo and committing to things and keeping themselves accountable. Mm-hmm. Because if you're not, it's going to be very, very difficult for you. And so if somebody who has the opportunity to do it all on their own and can do it individually and they choose, what does that say about an individual who can't do it on their own and then chooses not to?
Right.
So I just encourage, like, again, and I appreciate your authenticity and your willingness to share here, but I encourage everybody to sort of really self-reflect and evaluate, like, what type of personality are they? Do they actually think it's going to be uncomfortable? Mm-hmm. But if you actually go and put yourself in proximity to people that are doing amazing things, like, how could that materially benefit you? Yeah. Awesome.
Cool. Preschool pickup calls.
Go.
Thank you.
All right. That was fun.
That was good. I find it surprising that she says she wants to be like at the bottom of the level, at the bottom of the team to then get better. And I kept thinking about like a sports team. You can either be the best on a like soft, lower level team, summer league team, or you can put yourself on like a traveling all-star team. You may not be the best player, but because you are around exceptionally talented players, you will by default get better as a player.
Yeah.
And it's the same for anything. You could extrapolate that to anything, especially this industry. If you are exposing yourself to people that, like you always say, do outsized outcomes, you are going to by default, same thing as like in sports, you will get better.
Yes or no?
No.
Yeah.
So you may be cut.
Yeah. The sports analogy makes sense from like a team perspective. But also I think if you put yourself around exceptional people that are doing outsized outcomes, it is going to expose you if you're not willing to work and you're not willing to learn and grow. And that's why I think a lot of people don't put themselves in that position, because subconsciously I think they know they can't do it.
They're going to see what it takes. Like, you're going to see what an athlete has to do to perform at a level. And they're going to say, I'm never, you know, that's not for me.
Yeah.
Which is, we started at the beginning, we all have theories. My theory on why people don't show up is they think about, they reach a level and it feels good and they worked really hard to get there. And then to think about continuing to grow, this is just my personality, to know the amount of work it's going to take based on my past experiences of what it took to get to certain levels seems overwhelming, seems exhausting, and it makes me less likely to put myself out there because I'm like, I'm good. That was so hard and I need a break.
Here's what I know about that though. I know that that's a fleeting feeling that has an end. Complacency is uncomfortable, right? With very few exceptions, if somebody is comfortable doing what they're doing for an extended period of time and they don't learn and they don't grow,
they're in a plateau.
They start to become very, very uncomfortable with the plateau. and or because they've become complacent, they stop doing the things that even got them there in the first place. And then they start to go backwards.
Right. Oh my gosh, you're right.
Yeah. So I think you have this, people have this perception that like, if I can just make $100,000 a year, I'll be happy and all that kind of stuff. Well, you're grinding to make that money and you're putting in all this effort and you're getting the results, and then you get the results. And then what happens is you become complacent because you don't have that drive and that motivation to accomplish something. You don't have any purpose or passion anymore. And you start to pull back on the activities that actually got you the success.
Yes.
Right? And or maybe even you just do that same thing over and over again. But like, think about it from a workout perspective. You go and do the same exact spin class every single day for an entire year. Are you motivated at the same level? Or do you find the same sort of purpose and passion from that spin class day one or day 12 as you do day 365?
Right.
And the answer is no.
And if you think, okay, I made it to this plateau, it took me doing this, I'm just going to maintain. Guess what? The environment changes. Mm-hmm. The landscape changes. There's going to be AI now. There's going to be Instagram. It's not possible. You have to keep adapting and growing. Now, I do think plateaus are valuable. They are a catching your breath. Mm-hmm. They are enjoying the fruits of your labor.
Yep.
But like you said, at some point, it will start to dip down. It is going to change either way.
And this goes into like a whole nother discussion about purpose over happiness. I think that suffering has a bad rap. I think that happiness as a goal is overrated. And I think that purpose over happiness is the direction. I think the problem is that people, during the course of striving for something, I think they tend to focus on the difficulties over the beauty of it. And you hear me start a lot of our meetings and our sessions with a lot of gratitude, and also a lot of, I pause at a certain point and I say, hey, listen, just stop and notice the moment that we're in right now. Mm-hmm. We all have kids. Life is crazy. Like, we all have, we're working 60 hours a week. There's a lot of stuff going on. But also understand that if you could look back at this exact moment, if you could 10 years, 15 years, when you're sitting around in retirement or you physically can't do what you can do right now, and you look back on this time, you will look back at this, at your passion and your hard work, you will look back at it as one of the best times in your life. But in the moment, we tend not to recognize
that. Absolutely.
And so we only focus on the negative or the difficulties. And that just, again, compounds the issue of trying to push and strive for more.
Right. So I think that stops people from showing up is, I don't want to explore leveling up. I don't want to explore growth right now, because they can think about was, you know, past experiences. But I think if they look at it like what Ashley was saying, being in proximity to others doing amazing things as not intimidation, as not showing me what I'm not doing, but just as it's going to rub off. And I don't have to do it alone. I don't have to level up alone. Mm-hmm. And it makes it less intimidating. But I don't know why people don't show up to the calls or the meetings. And I'm guilty of it. But it is interesting in this industry. I do think...
Well, you talk about complacency real quick. Don't get away from that. Because I think there are people that are making enough money to satisfy their financial needs. Right? And they go to themselves, well, I don't need to make any more money in order to... Like, I don't want more money. I think that purpose can change. Like, it's not always, your idol doesn't have to be finances. It doesn't have to be money. But what if you could make the same amount of money working half the amount of time?
Yeah.
What if you could buy back your time?
Yeah.
What if you could start doing things that had more of an impact and more of a non-financial reward, right?
Yeah, that is real level up. Not doing more work for more money, but actually doing less work for same amount of money. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is, and then I'll take that level any day.
And then spending your time having an impact, whether that's with your family or your friends or the community or
hobbies,
whoever it is. Like, imagine that being a goal, but most people don't even get exposed to that idea. They think that collaboration and learning will only lead to more money and more work.
Yes.
And that's not necessarily what, at least what I am striving to help people accomplish. I want Ashley to make more money so that she can gain financial freedom, but I want Ashley to do it in less time so that she can enjoy her life a little bit more.
Yeah.
And a lot of my coaching and work with Ashley has less to do with, you know, we definitely work on her business and, you know, all of the things that will make her more successful. But a lot of the work that I work with Ashley on is sort of painting a picture of the future self of Ashley. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, what's it like when the kids are in school full time? What is it like when you guys have the option to allow Connor to retire, right? And or join the business and or like not retire and do nothing, but like follow a passion that he wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
What does it look like when you don't have to work all of your free time to do the business, to make the money, to pay the bills, to mm-hmm. then go and more work more? Like, mm-hmm. what does that life look like?
To not having to take calls at 7 o'clock at night.
Correct.
Yeah, more freedom.
And I'm just starting to do that now. Like after all of this time, like I told Sandy, this is the first spring that I want to start going home at like 4 o'clock
mm-hmm.
in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very difficult for me because I have a lot of work that I could do. And
probably scary in a way
to leave
things on the table. To feel like that. Because it's a belief that you've believed. If you don't work until 7, then you're leaving.
Correct. And 100% I'm leaving opportunities on the table because mm-hmm. I could prospect for 3 hours and work until 7 o'clock and probably make twice as much as I'm making right now.
Mm.
It's not hard anymore because I have put myself in proximity to people that have done that and are now living that life. And I see it and I feel it and I know that that is my purpose. Again, it's not as difficult for me now because of showing up.
Mm.
I show up to 4 mastermind groups leveling up for me every single week. Like I am on conference calls and I'm learning and I'm going to 3 to 4 events every single year to put myself in proximity. I went down and spent money and time versus building more business to go down to Dallas. And I was just happened to sit at a round table right next to Brent Grove from EXP. Who has 20,000 agents and is downlining and makes $1 million a month in residual income. And I spent the day sitting next to him, hearing him talk to other people. I got to ask him a lot of questions. Like, how much value is that? Mm-hmm. Because that, like, you see the joy on his face. Because all he's doing right now is his passion to help impact other people and to build other people's wealth.
We've talked about that. The lightness that you see on these people that have found freedom mm-hmm. and found this ability to work, but the work is for them. They're not working for the work.
So I think what's interesting is that it starts with showing up. So like this is a huge progression. Like it took me 7 years to build my business where I was on coaching calls and mastermind calls and role play groups and Google Meets every single day so that I would stay accountable and motivated. I would go to 3 events spending $2,000 to $5,000 per event every year to be in proximity to agents that were doing more than what I was to expand my eye, like my vision of what was possible. And then when I got to a certain point where I realized that that particular group of people didn't align with where I wanted to go, I ended up finding other people. And then I paid for new coaching and I put myself in new proximity to other people. And I've just continued to get uncomfortable, put myself in great rooms next to great people. Then every once in a while, you pick your head up and you make sure that it's still in alignment with what you want out of life.
So I have a question for the person who's like in a rut or a routine or a plateau or they're not surrounded. What's the first step? What would you love for their week to look like? How many events do they need to be going to a week, a month?
Every event possible.
No, come on. Like 2 calls a week?
No, but Lauren, this is the thing, is that if you don't know what to do and how to do it, and you're not motivated to do it, the best thing that you could do is start to participate in everything that you can that will actually move you towards your goal. Now, I'm not saying just go out and meet with a mortgage broker or an insurance guy or play golf with your buddies who you say, oh, well, they're going to get to know that I'm playing. No. You have to do things intentionally. So you have to find the people that are at or above the level that you want and put yourself in proximity to them.
Okay.
And so if you, and then do anything that can put you in proximity to them. Show up to any event. We have a younger guy that came and he interviewed to join the team with us here locally, and he wasn't going to be full time. So we don't hire non-full time agents on our team. But I gave him some advice and guidance, and I know he went and spoke with like five other top agents in the area and got advice and guidance. So he's already doing it. Then he's got a full-time job, but he's closing transactions and he's showing up to every event and he's consuming all the content that we have online and he's going to all of these things, and his growth is exponentially better than almost anybody else that I've seen at this organization. And the reason for that is because he shows up and he will come to anything that involves people that he holds in regard to get him closer to what he wants out of life and to expose him to new ideas and new thoughts and new ways of doing things, right? Because he's not going to be able to do that himself at the rate of speed that he wants to. And so a guy that has a full-time job outside of real estate shows up to more events and more calls than 90% of the people who don't have anything else to do. Why? He gets it.
Yep.
But I think that the people who are out there that are struggling, that are having a difficult time, the biggest thing is just to show up. It's going to be uncomfortable. It is going to sort of shine a light on what you're not doing.
It could be embarrassing.
It's going to be in it, but it won't be. Like,
right. No, they play that in their head.
They do. They play it in their head and they think that there's like that they're going to. I have like so much respect for people who will be vulnerable and uncomfortable and put themselves in a situation where they don't know what the outcome is going to be. Some agents don't know what to expect when they show up to a mastermind or a group call, or they think that they're going to get called on, or I might even call on them and they might have to answer a question or do so. But it's all in an effort. And I think that people want to pretend that they're at a higher level than they are, or that they know more than they are, or their ego gets in the way, or their pride gets there. And I think that a lot of that, if you're vulnerable, the people that I love to surround myself with most are very authentic and very vulnerable. They're like, I don't know this. Jose Morales, like he had such a big impact on me early on when I started getting proximity to Aaron, because he and I have a very similar personality. Our profiles are almost identical, but when he shows up to events, like he's willing to ask questions where I would be embarrassed to ask the question initially. He's willing to
put himself out there, say what he doesn't know,
because he's like, I don't know. And people assume that if you don't know, then you must not be as smart or as intelligent, and your ego gets in the way of asking those questions. Jose would just be like, I don't understand. Can you explain it better?
Yeah. Or
I don't understand. Here's what I don't understand. Can you tell me how that makes sense to you? Right. Where I would be like, why am I not getting this? In my head, I would run through and I'd say, why am I not understanding this? I don't really get it. But I would never be comfortable in previous iterations of myself. I would never be comfortable to be like, hey, listen, I don't get it. Can you tell me why? I don't like and put myself out there. But now that I do, because what happens is if you don't understand it in the moment, there's no way that you can implement it in the future. And so Jose gave me permission, and that wasn't even who I was there to be next to. Now it turns out that being next to him and Aaron at the same time was like the magic formula for me. But like I went to be in proximity to Aaron, but Jose gave me permission to start changing the way that I view asking questions and following up and being okay saying, I don't understand. I need you to go over that again. Right. And not being concerned about, oh, well, 90% of the room understood it. And now they got to hear it again. 90% of those people that understood it probably have a very cursory understanding of how it actually works. And they would love for it to be explained again. But you don't think that in the moment. You think everybody else knows how to do this and I don't. So what is wrong with me? So I think it just ultimately comes down to like showing up. You have to show up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I hope people show up on Thursday.
Yeah.
And these calls.
Yep.
That you do. But I think it's a really interesting conversation. I don't think it's over yet.
No.
And I'd like to hear other people's perspectives on putting themselves out there, what they got out of networking events, calls, stuff like that. Just different takes. Mm-hmm. And they'll have their own reasons of why maybe they didn't go to things and what happened when they did.
Cool.
I love storytelling.
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
Good chatting with you.
See ya.
Bye.